Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, back from having a job and not being able to come. And welcome to Pop of Rockets, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love and then having years of battle over who will control said pop culture. With me to fight for control over TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Guy, it is so wonderful to see your beautiful face again.
It is beautiful to be back. Margaret has a thoroughly East Los Angeles top on and is sipping white wine out of a Japanese teacup. I mean,
yes.
it's peak Margaret Wappler.
I chose this because this is very of the moment with all the ceramic ladies of Mount Washington and whatnot.
And we have two very special guests. Returning guest, Sarah Ofkaren Kessler, who is also a professor of feminist media at the Annenberg School at USC, and a TV critic, and my erstwhile editress.
Hello, G. May I call you G?
You may call me whatever you like, Sarah.
G. Branum.
Sarah, what are you working on these days?
In addition to Rosé all day, I've actually been writing about presidential debates.
Oh, that's wow. Exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, CNN seems hell-bent on turning them into just like a type of television and not something that happens for like 4 months.
Yes. Yeah. And I've actually been revisiting older presidential debates. So going back to and the Bulge controversy. Remember Bulgegate when they thought he had the listening device taped to his body? And then I've been also writing about Obama and teleprompters. So I've been kind of like writing about technology.
Oh, this is so interesting.
Yeah, I just gave a talk at Berkeley and also at University of Alberta about it.
And we also have a new player. You've never been on the show before, have you?
I haven't, and I love pop culture. This has been ridiculous.
Also, she's not just a dear friend and colleague of mine, but also a dear friend of Margaret Wappler's.
Yes.
Margaret brought her in. Ladies and gentlemen, it is TV writer, pop culture connoisseur, and the human being who informed me when the Duchess of Devonshire, Deborah Mitford, was dead, Laura Kraft.
It's lovely to be here.
Laura, what should people know about what you've worked on?
Comedy shows lately. It's been like sitcoms. I most recently wrote on Murphy Brown.
You also worked on Another Period.
I did. I worked with my friend Guy Branum on Another Period and many other shows.
And you were for The Colbert Report.
I was one of the original writers in The Colbert Report. That was a long time ago, though.
Yes.
It was 1902. Television had not yet been invented.
Part of the reason I wanted to have Laura Kraft come on is because she is part of my Game of Thrones watching crew.
Yes. Oh, okay.
At David and I's house. And like she contributes amazing commentary and often loud gasps in the middle of shows.
I'm always shocked.
And theories just bounced on the spot.
And
so
remember,
I knew she'd be good.
I brought a Direwolf cracker thing that I made that was much like the one that
that's right.
Hot,
oh my God. That
pockets.
Arya.
What's that? Hot Buns? What was that kid's name?
Hot Pockets?
Hot Pie. I prefer Hot Pockets.
That's right. And it was very tasty.
Thank you. I added honey.
You were on it.
Yeah. And it was shaped like a dire wolf?
Yes, it was.
That is next level.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean,
she don't fool around.
I do not fool around.
Guys, we have to save this for later. I'm sorry. but we have to thank our former Pop Rocket producer, Christian Duenas, who demanded that we give him credit for finding this week's intro music, El Juego de Tronos, played by Colombian musicians in their local vallenato style. So thank you so much, Christian.
Aw, baby Christian.
We miss you. Coming up on this week's show, we are, of course, talking about Game of Thrones. But before that, a reminder that our next Pop Rocket Seal of Approval vote is fast approaching. And it looks as though it is a three-way contest between Catherine O'Hara, Sandra Oh, and Toni Collette. They received far and away the most of our Facebook poll. So at this moment, listeners should focus on trying to persuade the panel with arguments for or against these nominees. I personally am horrified that I was not here to defend Parker Posey. It was inappropriate and very...
I'm surprised at Karen, really.
I mean, what could be less Gen X,
you know? Yeah, exactly.
The Catherine O'Hara supporters have been very vocal. So if you're standing for Sandra Oh or Toni Collette, it is time to step up. You can call my mom at 530-237-4108. You can also record a message with your phone's voice memo app and email the audio to poprocketpodcast@gmail.com. So later in the show, we're going to be sharing our latest gems. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Margaret Wappler, what are you all about this week?
I am addicted to a new podcast called Going Through It, which is hosted by Anne Friedman. She's the co-host of Call Your Girlfriend. She's also been on the show before a couple years ago. We should probably have her back. She interviews all kinds of fascinating people, writers, musicians, politicians, like someone named Hillary Clinton. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, entrepreneurs. And she asks them to basically share a time when they were deciding whether they should quit something or keep going. And it's a really great idea. It's fascinating because it just breaks down the decision-making process that, like, all of us go through to make any kind of decision, whether it's, like, love-related or business-related. Like, there's such a range in the show of what people are talking about. The first episode is with Anchi Danielson, who is a Harvard professor or was a Harvard professor, and she came up with this idea basically to start Zipcar. And she enlists a best friend of hers who has an MBA and that she's very close to. And it ends up going just super south between them. And her best friend actually fires her. And there's this whole kind of coup that happens in Zipcar in the early days. And it's fascinating to listen to all the decisions that she had to make, like moment by moment, blow by blow, and this whole thing. So it's just a really, like, riveting podcast. And the thing I like about it, too, is that it's, like, it's lean and mean. Like, each episode is 20 minutes. She doesn't fool around with, like, a bunch of, like, intro chatter. It's just, like, getting down to brass tacks with these people. Great for running errands. Just pop that thing on and you're good to go.
It sounds really good.
Yeah.
Sarah, what are you all about?
I'm all about the show Dr. Pimple Popper. So I saw this show while I was browsing Hulu, and I was really shocked to discover that there are two full seasons of this show. And I was really intrigued by the name, which, of course, like, conjures this kind of very painful but also very pleasurable situation of, like, popping a pimple, which I'm sure we've all done at some point in our lives.
I kind of live for it, but yeah, go on.
I never have because I have really good skin.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think of it as the painful pleasure of puncturing a pus-filled protrusion. The sense of accomplishment that we all feel when popping these abscesses on our bodies and, like, releasing this unwanted matter. This kind of alien matter that is, yeah, you know, that is we're hosting. And so I turned on the first episode of this show at, like, 11 at night, and Karen, like, had to turn away.
I was going to say, that
she
does not seem Karen's jam.
Absolutely horrified. She was like, can't we just watch Survivor? And I was just like, babe, I just have to see this. Like, and so I turned on the first episode and met Dr. Sandra Lee, who is the hostess, hostess with the mostest.
Such a sweet, innocent name.
Dr. Sandra Lee.
Popper.
Okay, she's so totally badass. She is a celebrity dermatologist, and she has this kind of, like, intense joy at popping pimples large and small that reminded me of the joy that the dick doctor in Lorena expresses about having to reattach John Wayne Bobbitt's peen. Like, you
my
know
fantasy
how, like,
realized.
When you're watching that, he's like, you know, it like cuts to that guy and he just has this, like, enormous smile on his face.
He's so proud of himself.
And he's like, yeah, he's just like, and it had only been 20 minutes. And then, like, you know, and it was like, and the blood started flowing and he gets, like, really excited about it. That's kind of the excitement that Dr. Lee, it's a little bit more, like, restrained, but that's sort of the excitement that Dr. Lee has about, like, removing these protrusions. It's kind of gleeful. Each episode of the show chronicles Dr. Lee's treatment of several patients who come in hoping to have these giant lipomas, cysts, lumps, bulges, and other unspecified growths removed from their bodies. And, like, some of them are literally, like, the size of another limb. And then, like, some of them are just like, I'm covered in little, like, pus-filled things, and you have to systematically lance every one of them.
Oh, wow.
I watched a YouTube video of a blackhead removal.
That was probably Dr. Lee.
I, like, can't unsee.
She became famous for blackhead removal.
And it was very satisfying. It was on a woman's upper back, and, like, how much came out was just unsettling, but it was so satisfying. Laura Kraft, what pus-related pop culture are you going to tell us about today?
I had to do it. I'm sorry.
I just think it's so funny. Like, I'm a very cysty person. Like, I just had a cyst taken out of my vocal cords.
That's right.
And I had vocal cord surgery. I had a huge cyst on one side and nodules on the other. And I have a huge cyst growing on my thyroid. I have cysts all over the place. So
but
I get
internal
that.
Internal cysts.
I have internal cysts.
Okay.
brag. not to cis drop, but I have a lot of cis. Anyway, what am I into? I have been... Have you guys already talked about What We Do in the Shadows?
I don't think we have.
Oh, my God. It's like my new favorite show. I love it so much. It's on FX. It's on Wednesday nights. It's amazing. Have you ever seen the most hilarious movie ever,
yes.
What We Do in the Shadows?
Yes.
No, I haven't. Okay.
You would really enjoy it.
I don't have my phone, or I would Google like what year. I think it was 2014.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the New Zealand director.
The guy from Thor.
Yes. The guy who directed Thor.
Oh, okay. Yes.
When I was in New York working at Murphy Brown, I was staying in an apartment without internet. So I would download a couple movies and I just would watch them over and over because I needed sound like in this apartment where I was staying. And that was, I love that movie so much. I must have watched it easily 60 times. I would just have it like running sort of in a loop. It's so funny. And every time I found something else to laugh at. And it's basically a documentary about vampires living amongst us. And they live in a house and there's like a whole range of vampires. There's a guy, a super old ghouly one. There's one who's sort of a Victorian one. There's one. They're roommates who are vampires. And it is so funny. The movie's genius. Highly, highly recommend it. Many levels and layers of hilarity. And also, they're very human. And it's like how all of us would be vampires if we became vampires. Like, you'd still retain your personality, but you're living forever. And you have hopes and dreams that are dashed and or maybe you keep striving after. Anyway, so then they made it into a TV show. And as is always the case, when you really love a movie, I was very scared it wouldn't live up to it. And it is so great. It's so funny. And I guess I realized it. Of course, it's a good TV show because the movie is based in character. And anything that's like character based usually transfers well to TV versus a story based. Mm. In the TV show, it's another house, it's a different house of vampires. And Matt Berry from Snuffbox. Did you ever watch that show?
Mm-mm.
It was a really funny two-person sketch show with Rich Fulcher from The Mighty Boosh.
Okay.
Matt Berry's a British comic. And it's just... It's so funny.
Oh, good. Okay.
Wednesday nights on FX. Mm.
I love the movie. I need to check out the show.
The show is great. You're going to love it.
I think I will. You guys, it's been a really long time since I was here, and a lot has happened in pop culture in the intervening time. So for me to pick what I'm all about, we really are going over, honestly, the entirety of May, all the way reaching back into the furthest reaches of March. You guys, this week, this month, I'm all about Chasten Buttigieg's Twitter. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Like,
I've gone on that.
It has been.
I have also.
So his name is Chasten, not Chasen?
No, that was. my friend was very like, it's spelled that way. How do you know it's pronounced like that? And my answer was because I watched the entirety of their wedding on YouTube.
Oh, my.
Where it's on posted.
Oh yes, from like when they were non noteworthy, they just posted the entirety. There's like 20 minutes of buffer at the beginning that's just sort of like a card with their names and then like people milling about.
Oh my God.
This is our first time having a queer candidate for president who is in any way taken seriously. There's been a lot of conversation about whether he's gay enough, about whether he is marginalized enough, about whether he is too mainstream, too passy, blah, blah, blah. What there has not been debate about is whether Chasten Buttigieg is gay. And he is.
Has that been up for discussion? Like, is he gay?
Wonderful. Oh, I mean, there was the Pete Buttigieg is gay, but he's not queer. That was one of the think pieces we got.
Oh, boy.
And regardless of politics, I'm not at all saying that.
I just rolled my eyes, even though no one knows. Now everyone knows that.
Chasten is just so peak middle of America, like basic gay in all of the best ways. I mean, him revealing to us that Pete Buttigieg could be our first Hufflepuff American president since Jimmy Carter, like shattering the Twitter account that he runs for the dogs.
It still actively tweeting?
Absolutely.
Wow.
The Onion had a really funny Pete Buttigieg article, which was that he had released a definitive accounting of all of his personal quirks, like that we don't know anything about his policies, but we do know that he speaks Norwegian and plays piano and stuff like that, which is like... fair, but there was a news article that was like, he would like to jam with fish if he gets elected president.
And people were so stirred up by that.
And Chasten's response was, you misspelled Beyonce. And it's just like, you've got to love this guy. He's an elementary school teacher from the middle of America. And it really is just sort of like this new territory of having to understand how, not just how a gay man would be president, but how a gay man would be first spouse. And I I love the goofiness with which Chasten is approaching this. I'm sure he will stumble and fall, but I also am also sure that he will learn from it and grow. He seems adorable. So shout out to Chasten, and please follow him. It's always a good time. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We're going to take one break before we all fall to the army of the dead. We'll be back.
The Greatest Generation is a Star Trek podcast that destigmatizes the very idea of having a Star Trek podcast.
We're Ben and Adam, the hosts of The Greatest Generation, and the technology we've developed is that nobody knows what you're playing in your earbuds.
You know, with legalization, it's easier than ever to find out what's in your buds. But we suggest that you legally find The Greatest Generation wherever you download your podcasts.
We'll send it to you in a discreet, unmarked package, and nobody has to know but us.
That's The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast that you didn't know you needed, yet makes you feel like you belong.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Margaret Wappler.
Sarah, wait, excuse me, of Tongson.
Laura Targaryen.
Winter and Karen are out this week, but we decided to take this opportunity since they do not watch Game of Thrones. So Margaret and I can indulge in our love of Game of Thrones. And I just have to ask.
We've been shut down for a while on this front. Like, how we can never really talk about
Sarah, it. Sarah, how do you manage a mixed marriage?
This is one of those rare things where, like, I don't usually like for Karen to watch television in the bedroom. And this has long been a kind of issue between us, but TV is the only thing that can get her to fall asleep because she's anxious, for those of you who don't know, from her calm exterior. But she really can handle any TV being on when she's falling asleep. It's just sort of like noise. The way we manage it is that a lot of the time I'm watching it and she is sleeping, but I'm now watching Game of Thrones with a group of lesbians and their gabies.
I mean, like, Yara Greyjoy and the Sand Snakes getting taken down must have hit that group pretty hard.
I wasn't with that group at the time, but I will say that near the end of episode one, when they find the White Walker child nailed to the wall and it starts screaming and then they immolate it, my friend put her hands over her daughter's eyes and started singing, like, A, B, C, D.
Really? That seems wise. That
Peter
seems
Umber?
Wise.
What?
Peter Umber?
Yes.
Anyway.
So we only have four episodes left, is it?
Oh my god.
We're solidly out of any territory where George R. R. Martin has written books. We only have four episodes left. We've been taken on such a ride. Do you feel like it can land?
But let me just say that apparently season 8 is seeded with something that George R. R. Martin has planned all along.
Okay.
There's some shocking moment online with, like, Shireen being sacrificed, like that kind of thing that he apparently told them all along, this has to go towards the end.
He gave them note cards with plot points, but I think you really can feel the absence of his narrative.
Yeah.
There was so much more ambiguity. There was so much more willingness to fuck with our expectations. Mm-hmm. And I feel like fan service has grown over the last season and a half.
Yeah. Well, I think the break, like, did something to all of us where it was like the pining. I really wanted it back. It's like interesting how long it's been on. It's like actually marked like eras of my life at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's 7 years. Laura, do you think that this thing will land?
What, the battle and the ending?
Satisfyingly, yes.
It's so I mean, I'm not a big fan of roller coasters, but I do feel like I'm on the click, click, like the beginning of going up a hill part of a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And I'm so okay, here's the quote that I think sums everything up, which is Bran's quote to Jaime, where he's like, how do you know there is an afterwards? Because, I mean, this whole thing could just end in, like, a swirling mass of snow where, like, you know, everybody gets killed. And then the Night King is, like, done and kills all the... And this, like, you know, his, like, thing that he did at the battle of... where it was, like, the battle with all the White Walkers.
Yeah.
Hamdome? What was that one
called? I don't ever remember the name
but
of the battles.
But where he, like, has them all just
this
sort
is just of like
collapse.
History class where I don't remember the name of the battles there
Me
either.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Hardome?
Hardhome.
Hardhome. Where he just sort of can have them all sort of collapse into nothingness and then reassemble and then collapse and then reassemble. I think he's just going to, like, everything's just going to end and be done.
Yeah, I mean, it actually excites me that I feel like one of the very real possibilities of this show is that everyone might just end up dead. Like, yeah. I really feel like that's an actual possibility.
Like, Sarah, Martin, like, loves pulling narrative conventions out from under us. He loves killing the strongest straight guy who seems sort of noble-ish. Do you think that we could get something that is that, like, unsatisfying as an ending?
That it would be unsatisfying in, like, to the mainstream, to kind of, like, mainstream expectations?
Well, yes, because
it's going to be unsatisfying if nobody makes it to the Iron Throne. But I think somebody's going to make it to the Iron Throne, but then they're going to bicker their way into, like, disaster.
I mean, rarely do we have tragedies that go so far as to say, and then humanity's over.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
I just think it's cool that there could sort of be the idea that maybe this all existed, and then it just, like we could possibly do with climate change, where the Earth just explodes.
Right.
And then it's just sort of like, then it slowly recreates, but we won't see that recreation because all memory of us is gone.
Yeah.
I think that Benioff and Weiss, though, just, you know, like on the tip of them having sort of taken over this enterprise, I think they're too basic to go in that direction. They're really these kind of, I mean, they're these sort of basic dudes.
Dude bros.
And they're very, they have a way more basic conception of what they're doing in terms of building character than what is actually unfolding on the screen.
Yeah, when you see their interviews afterwards and you're like, no, just shush.
They have no, like to them, none of the female characters have interiority. Like, they don't even imagine that that's there.
Okay, I was on the wiki for Leanna Moore. Mormont.
My favorite. I love her so much.
I mean, best character on the show. And there was a link to another article on the Game of Thrones wiki. And I, as somebody who had watched the TV shows and read the books and think about this a lot, hadn't noticed the number of female, like, lords, female sort of like fief holders that exist in the books that were just sliced away from the TV show. That the TV show considered it essentially too interesting to have, with the exception of Lyanna Mormont, to have women making calls and decisions who weren't one of those evil badass ladies who we love to hate.
Sure.
Or like a lady who's gone through it all, like Sansa, and it's like she's finally got power.
That, like, if we don't know the story of her sexual assault, why do we need to know that she's in charge of something?
And if we don't watch the sexual assault, like, why do we have to see the Bolton wedding night? What was the importance of that?
Well, I mean, this is why I thought the Arya, like, sex scene with Gendry was so important.
Yeah.
I know that some people blew back on that on Twitter and were not happy with it, but I actually thought it was a great move because it finally showed a woman having a normal, or I don't want to say normal, but like a consensual, a consensual sexual relationship that she initiated and that she seemed to be pretty on board with. I mean, like, there was that interesting look at the end where you see the two of them in bed and she's got this kind of, like, not totally satisfied look
in her
eye.
She's like, that's it? That's
exactly. But that's also, like, true to life, right? Like, she's, and I feel like that's also what Winterfell does to all the Starks. They kind of, they feel comfortable, they feel safe, they feel like they can be themselves again. And she was like, suddenly she's like, I'm actually an 18-year-old girl. I want to have sex. That's what 18-year-old girls want to have. So here we go. You know, and that was, like, such an empowering moment to me in this show that's shown rape after rape and horrible things happening to women sexually.
Laura, you said that you had, like, turned around on the Starks. Explain that to me.
Okay. A lot of that turnaround came when Grey Worm and
Missandei
came in, and you're like, and everybody was, the whole racism thing.
Yeah.
Where I was like, all of a sudden I was just like, ugh, the North, where people, and, you know, where Jon Snow is sort of explaining with, like, a little smug smile, like, it takes a while for people to kind of get to know you up here. And I was like, how did they learn racism? They haven't seen any people of color. How do they know, like, those little girls who, like, are holding hands and when Miss, what's her name?
Missandei
comes over to and says, like, hi, and they're like, ugh. I was just like, it made me hate the North. Suddenly I was just like, ugh. Really? Why are we defending this place? Why are they so great? They're inherently racist. Isn't that amazing?
It's such a great, I mean, the scene where they're, where Jon, Daenerys, the whole kind of amalgamated army is arriving back to Winterfell, the beginning of the first episode of the current season. is so great. It's so great when Grey Worm and Miss Henday are on those horses going through, and the exchange of gazes, you know, between these people. And it's like, the show is generally terrible at dealing with race in any way.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is its gesture to doing that, which is like a very paltry gesture given how many seasons there have been. But I do really appreciate the subtlety of it. And I think, again, that it's not Benioff and Weiss. I think it's the acting.
Yeah. Well, and also the thing is like the fact that they have given under 5% of the characters, like cast characters of color, like it's so little and so much more than any other high fantasy has done.
You
know,
that's true.
When you look back at Lord of the Rings and realize that we just consented to the idea of, you know, a white Middle Earth with the exception of the faceless hordes coming from elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, it was something. I do think that there is something very interesting about the North as this place on the periphery of reality. That Sansa's story I really love, because she starts out as
Sansa's story.
Little yeah. girl who is hearing stories of how womanhood works from this other normal place that is not like where she is. And she's like role norming herself to this version of femininity from stories so she can mm-hmm. be a lady and not like those, you know, not like the Mormonts with their maces. And then she gets down to the South and she meets Cersei and she meets Margaery. And these people who and the Queen of Thorns, who are like playing the game as women play it, but mm-hmm. tooth and nail. And she got torn apart in the process. But this creature that Sansa is now, who's not somebody who's going to fix something by picking up a sword, but is going to fix things, like, I do think is a beautiful and triumphant story.
It's also interesting that she gets used like the women in the South are used as pawns, as contract pieces, mm-hmm. versus like Lyanna's mother, who's a warrior who dies in the battle for Robb Stark.
Yeah.
And, you know, is raised by warriors. And then even like Catelyn Stark, who sort of like has a love marriage with Ned Stark, you know, and is kind of like an asshole to this, like, you know, like Cersei would be she'd be mean, but she wouldn't be as blatantly open about hating Jon Snow.
I mean,
she was the fake mother.
There is this notion that like northernness is associated with like honesty about your inner truths and being forthright and all of these things we think are good values. And I do like that this show has chopped those people into meat.
Yeah.
And really showed that those people who see the game for what it is and are able to play it, to some extent, that is necessary.
Although, I think it's interesting that, like, we think of the Starks as being, like, felled left and right, but the Lannisters have lost a lot of people, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that, like, Cersei's lost all of her children. Like,
yeah.
That's it. And I feel like that's, like, for her, that storyline is about, like, the corruption of power, you know? Like, she believes in power so absolutely, but in all of the cases of these children, like, the power is what totally rotted the system, you know what I mean? Like, killed them or somehow felled them.
Well, you think it's interesting that they make the Lannisters seem like they're this evil family and the Starks are this, like, noble and pure family, when really, like, Jaime Lannister ends up being a good guy, Tyrion's a good guy. It's really, and Tommen was good.
It's only the
and
women who are bad. I mean, like, in the the case of the Lannisters, it's like
Marcella is okay.
Yeah, Marcella was okay. It's like they've found a way, though, to make her the absolute villain of the entire...
When it should have been like Tywin.
She's actually kind of worse than the Night King.
Yeah, she's like conscious
because,
of what she's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that the books do a nice job because everybody is separated from each other of moral ambiguity. I mean, Jaime did still fucking shove a child out of a window.
Right.
You know? Like,
right, but he feels bad about it.
Right.
Therefore, he's a good guy.
And he was in love. He was in love, guy.
I do think that the books do a better job, particularly A Feast for Crows is this weird book where all you get is Brienne running around, like you get Cersei.
I have got to read this.
As a POV character for the first time, and then a bunch of shit in Dorne that didn't matter. I'm still pissed off about that. But the thing is that I feel like it has more sympathy for the fact that like Cersei lived in a world when she was so close to the things that she wanted, but they were not things that she could grip herself. And that she has essentially been twisted by that. I do think, I'm going to start with my predictions, I think Jaime Lannister is going to die before the last episode.
I think he's
going to
die next week.
So she can go
for sure.
Full Mad Queen, because I think the show already sees him as damaged goods a little bit. And
but hasn't she already gone full? She's already given a crossbow to what's his name to Brian. Kill them if
and
they win.
Blown up the Great Sept of Baelor.
No, but this last week she gave him a crossbow and said, "Killed both my brothers." That's Jaime. That's her lover.
No, she's
done.
Totally gone off the rails.
But I'm saying blowing up all of King's Landing, like something like that. Like she's going down.
She was promised elephants.
Yes, she was promised elephants.
And she really was robbed. And she was robbed. Elephants.
I do feel like, I mean, if we're going to go into prediction mode based on last show, second show, like Brienne was given so much time and literally knighted that she's going to die, right? Like,
oh God,
she's
the first person to die.
She's also in the front line.
We had two situations. Jaime got his beautiful moment. Jaime's dying. And I think Gendry and Arya, and I don't think Benioff and Weiss have it in them to kill Arya, and I think Gendry
is Gendry's
gone.
So dead.
Gendry's
dead,
die.
Brienne's dead, Tormund's dead.
But also, you of all people, Laura Craft.
How dare you?
Tormund.
Like, I'm going
to
miss him.
You of all people have to understand that somebody has to rule the Stormlands after this is all over.
Of course I understand that.
Gendry is the best claimant to the Stormlands, which is the only thing that makes me question that prediction.
Well, there's a little bit of, like, maybe he is the one who ends up on the, he's the last Baratheon.
Right. Yeah.
Stupid. I drank too much mead.
Tell everybody about your feelings about Tormund.
Oh, my feelings are deep. And they are kissed by fire, like his hair. Tormund, I mean, what part? The fact that he's Giantsbane, that he was suckled at the breast of a giant's...
I'm so glad that we got to hear that story.
It was so crazy with his
that
eyes.
That actor had just a million laughs with that moment. He
loved it. Anytime
he suckled
he has to say,
it for all it was worth.
Where's the giant woman? But wait, can we talk about how he influenced Jon Snow's voice? Here's my thing with Tormund. He came on the scene and he spoke like this. And now, do you notice Jon Snow talks like everyone is talking like that?
It's true. He's more hoarse now.
I'm a Targaryen.
Did you guys like these first two episodes? Did you find them satisfying? Because it has been a whole lot of exposition and prep.
Episode one, I did not find satisfying because I felt like it was just putting the chess pieces back on the table. Uh-huh.
But there are only six episodes this time. I know, but they had a lot of stuff, the exposition they had to spit
out.
It had been a long time.
I found it satisfying because it was, look, last season, we got the moment of Jon and Sansa coming back to get the Jon and Sansa hug, which is still for me one of the most memorable moments of the previous season. And I wanted to see those moments of reunion. I mean, especially between like Arya and Jon, we got a good Arya-Jon reunion. We got, I think, an apropos Jon Bran reunion. We need to talk about Bran, you
Bran's
guys.
Bran's haircut, his bowl cut, I agree.
We need
to
talk about how fucking annoying Bran actually is.
I go back and forth between thinking he's insufferable and then like amazing, and I don't know where I land anymore.
Sarah, give us your read.
And are we talking about the actor? Like, I can't, this is the other thing. I can't decide if it's bad acting.
No,
or
his
just
acting
like,
is great because I watched him on talk shows and he's charming.
Well, so that's really interesting because my friends who I was watching with last week said that they had heard Bran was not a bad actor, but very difficult to work with. And that was one of the reasons why they profoundly reduced his screen time. And I agree, he feels like a diva. And it's interesting to see the ways that his character has absorbed that divadom, you know, where it's like he's just like, I don't have time for your petty, you know, concerns.
Isn't he like 17? How dare he be difficult?
He's like 17. I can't believe he's difficult. First of all, he was 13 and he had to be carried around by Hodor. And I thought he was in really good spirits about it. He had an Ian Brown from the Stone Roses haircut that morphed into a bowl cut. He sits all day covered in furs.
His haircuts have never been flattering.
I do feel like this show had to surf a couple of puberties, and
that's rough.
It did them all right. I mean, Arya.
Arya's great.
Yes, came through
Sansa,
all right.
Sansa, great.
Yes.
I thought, I can't believe that Bran would be difficult. He's British. Like, they're not difficult. They're all, like, good actors who are like, oh, if it's all right, I'd like some tea. Like, they don't have British divas, do they?
Laura, who do you think is going to die next week?
Oh, my God. Well, my boyfriend, Tormund. Oh my God, I can't even tell you how upset I'm going to
be. It's going to be a list. No, it's not giant laundry list.
Yeah, I think it's going to be.
I think it's going to be pruning out
everyone
the B-listers
at the dinner.
Oh yeah, the B cast
everyone,
is going to be yeah. almost all
Podrick
done.
Podrick is definitely
Podrick
dying.
Payne, Podrick Payne, Barrack Dondarrion ain't lasting.
He's
Barrack,
gone.
Because his man bun guy
and
is gone.
And the Red Witch is not around to resurrect
him. Yeah, where is she?
Where is Melisandre?
I do. Okay, this is something I think she's going to come back.
But she's
going to
die on this continent. Yes.
Yeah. She said to Arya, we will meet again.
And
yeah.
she said like... to Varys that she would die on the... She knows how she's going to die.
Yeah. Do you think Varys will die?
Of course.
Okay. I've never had a character in media that I was able to identify with as much as Lord Varys of the Small Council.
And, I knew you were going to say that.
I was him for Halloween twice. I think Lord Varys of the Small Council will survive or die to create some sort of stability. Like having somebody whose like stance was essentially just stability is better than instability was such an interesting and centrist view.
Yeah.
Especially on that small council against like Littlefinger, who's just like chaos.
Yeah.
Is
chaos
how you gain
is
power.
Ladder. Yeah.
Here's how I think Varys is gonna die. Everyone's gonna go down in the crypts. We know from the teaser that he's gonna be down in the crypts. Can the crypt people reanimate? Can the Night King get those people reanimated?
There's not that many people down there.
Well, there's Lyanna, who's a badass. There's Ned.
Ned is beheaded, and then his bones were boiled. Like, I feel like there's not much of Ned to reanimate.
The thing that I find very interesting is if this were Tolkien, they would not be raisable because they were like properly buried and blah, 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 and the gods. But this is George R.R. Martin, who lets a creature of ice destroy a creature of fire and then raise him as a creature of fire still.
Yeah.
And like, I do think that what we are getting set up for is like Gilly and that little girl.
They're gonna die.
No, I think they're gonna have to fight those things off.
They're gonna have to fight
with almost nothing.
That little girl's gonna die because she's too cute.
All the children will be going below when the time comes. But both my brothers were soldiers. I want to fight too.
She's got that accent.
But Varys dying.
I want to be a soldier.
Varys dying in the crypt could very well happen. And also, it would give us an opportunity to get that Sean Bean cameo.
I mean, if Melisandre shows back up, she can also bring people back to life.
Can't she just start a fireball or something and kill all the.
the White Walkers?
I mean, clearly shit's going down in the crypt. It's not safe. They said it a million times that it's going to be safe, so therefore it's not safe.
The crypt is just a very overdetermined spot for the whole show.
So we've had. Got a lot of meetings happen there. There was a lot of talk about the three heads of the dragon, but also one of our dragons is dead now. Are Dany and Jon the two heads of the dragon? Do we think there will be a third head of the dragon? Do we think one of them is the second coming of Azor Ahai?
There's no talk of, I mean, there's been Azor Ahai talk in the TV show a little bit. There's been like no talk of the three heads of the dragons on the TV show. That's like all books to me.
Oh, really?
That I can remember.
Yeah,
like,
I don't
in
there's
the books,
been no
it's
talk
so,
in the TV show.
In the books, it's such a big deal. But in the TV show, it has never come up. And even Azor Ahai's, I think maybe was mentioned last week, maybe.
Uh-huh.
But it's not.
I feel
it's
like it's been a very small like bone to throw at the book readers.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been a major
It's sort of
feature.
Like when they were like, maybe John is Egon.
I think. But he is Egon.
But he is.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I know. But remember, they had the whole like.
I think Dany is the second coming of Azor Ahai. I think that...
Really?
Yes. I think that Jon...
What does that even mean? What does that mean?
So there was the guy who fought off the Night King last time made this sword and he tried to temper it on various things and it wouldn't make the sword strong enough. So eventually he shoved it into his wife's breast and that made the sword strong enough. He's like the messiah of... Rohalorism.
Okay.
And the Red God. And he was able to fight off the Night King last time. And so I think with Jon being a like re-raised creature, he has also seen a little bit as damaged goods. I think Dany will in some way have to leverage his life to be able to kill the
You
Night
know what?
King.
I'm going to tell you this. I think Danny's going to get killed.
See, okay.
I think John's going to have to kill him.
I think she's got a belly full of Targaryen incest, baby, and that's why she won't get killed.
Yeah, I also think she's not going to get killed.
She's pregnant.
I think they put way too much just story stock in her to just like kill her off. It would be very unsatisfying to just kill her off.
No, but
she's not gone evil enough. She's not gone.
She's
going to
kill
enough.
John. Here's my thing. She's going to kill John. Then she's going to die, and Sansa's going to take the throne.
I do think Sansa's the power
exactly
player.
Sansa
that
and
no
Cersei.
One's,
that fight's going to be
Sansa, no one's looking at the dark horse here, and Sansa is major moral compass
like
for that show.
She's like a power femme. Like yes. She, but I mean, that you just described exactly my fantasy about what happens, because I have increasingly, I used to love Dany, and I've increasingly turned away from her because I feel like her hubris has gotten out of control with all the bend the knee shit.
Where is that coming from, too? Like,
you know,
well, like,
where
well,
is
what
it
has Dany done that's any
like
different
turn
from any male leader in that show? Like, what has she actually
well,
done
people
that's
that she's,
any fucking different?
The people she's imitating is like, what's his name, Baratheon, who ended up dead after his wife hung herself and his daughter was burned at the stake. What's that? Stannis. Stannis had like that hubris where he was like, I have to rule the kingdoms. And it ended up like everyone ended up falling away from him except for the red goddess, whatever,
right,
Melisandre.
Right, yeah.
And they ended up losing. And I feel like Dany's on that path. She's suddenly like
I don't
become
think
blind
she's gone
to
crazy
rational
enough that way, though.
What's interesting is
she's
like,
not sacrificed anybody it, truly close to her.
She's been defined by the sense of singularity, which is interesting because when she was growing up, it was always her brother who was going to take
right
the throne, and then she was going to be his bride. And there's something interesting about John showing up that sort of like problematizes that sense of singularity. But I also think if they were thinking about it in the long term, she would maybe be like, they already had them awkwardly fall in love. Why doesn't she, like, in the most
which,
Targaryen
as the
of
the chemistry
senses,
between those actors, I don't feel like is there.
Yeah, the yes chemistry is not good,
no.
Yeah.
maybe they did have the sexual chemistry of uncle,
an aunt, and a nephew. So I can tell you, I have 12 nephews, and I don't have any sexual chemistry with any of them.
Frankly, Dany had like more, way more chemistry with Yara Greyjoy.
Yes,
who,
yes.
You know, is my favorite character on the show.
She's so good. Do you
so
know that
she's
also
safe
a good friend of our former producer, Colin Anderson?
Excuse
oh, really?
Me. Yeah. Okay.
Is she a
how's
comic?
That happen?
I don't think so.
Oh.
No, just an actor.
She seems cool. I've seen,
just
her,
an
well,
actor.
I've seen her on Graham Norton a lot, and she's very funny.
Uh-huh. I mean, but she, like, it was like when they met, there was some serious sparks that flew.
Yes.
And
between her and Dany, there were sparks.
Yeah, but between her and Dany, and, you know, not just because Dany got taught sex by her handmaiden.
Oh, my God.
When she was Khal Drogo's property. So, yeah.
Who do you think will win the Game of Thrones, Sarah Kessler?
I have absolutely no idea, but I am really hoping for Sansa, and I though is not, I'm just not somebody that has any idea what is actually feasible, but I don't think it's going to be Dany, because that would be too overdetermined. I don't think it's going to be Jon, because I just don't think he has the leadership skills.
And God, now I'm so scared Sansa's going to die.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also afraid of that too. But I feel like they've put the thing is when they torture a woman enough, they allow her to live to deal with the.
That's true.
Well,
you know, to deal with the repercussions of that trauma.
One of the things that is interesting.
She has to earn it in a way that no other man had to earn
yeah,
it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But the books are preoccupied with the question of female succession. Like, all of the historical backstory is just sort of like over parsing it, such that the Iron Throne, it is harder for a woman to come to the Iron Throne, but not impossible, than it is for all of the other titles in the country. And it does make me think that there is going to be something interesting around that.
Mm-hmm.
Laura, who do you think is going to win?
I said earlier, I think Sansa.
So it's
but I honestly, I'm not even kidding you. I would not be surprised if everyone dies. I really think.
Yeah,
you
I
think
feel
the
like
Night King wins?
Well, I think the Night King wins, and then we all die and memory is scrubbed. I think there was like this weird lead up, that whole thing where Sam is like, yes, you're right. That's what death is, isn't it?
Memory. Yeah.
Like, I was like, they're really landing heavily
it's
on the fact
it's also just
that,
like, wow, you're so fucking profound, Samwell Tarly.
He was.
You stole those library books.
He stole.
I feel like he's becoming.
Sarah's just angry at the stab at the Academy.
He's been mad at academia.
But
he's
becoming so irritating because I just feel like it's like that character. I mean, I just have a real bone to pick with. It's like he's coming full circle. He's like a kind of like a Jonah Hill type who's going to end up being hot at the end. He's and not, it's just like, fuck
and it'll
that
get
shit.
Mean no, and like dog girls left and right.
I love that this that the books and the show has taken fatness seriously and has taken dismissal of fatness and sort of like bookishness seriously.
Yeah, because I think like he's not a dude bro who's like he's always been very aware of who he is.
Yeah.
Which is the thing I love the most about him. He's like, I'm weak. My father wanted to hunt me down because I was too weak to be like a knight. So, you know, he's always been punished for being bookish. Now he can flourish like he's actually being appreciated. He's being told to go down to the crypts because he's too smart to lose, as is Tyrion, who was up. Did you see he was up at the wall at the
yes.
end of it?
Yes.
So
yes.
He might die.
Like, I think him handing off the Valyrian steel to Jorah Mormont, very smart. Also, Jorah Mormont, dead.
So dead, but also,
the door nails.
Is it everyone whose voice drops in the last episode? He was another
anyone
one.
You got a significant moment
like
with
this.
Is dead.
Yes.
Yeah, Jorah, Theon. Eating soup with Sansa means he dies.
Okay, Guy, are you going to ask me? I'm dying to fucking tell my
yes.
theories. Okay.
Yes. I thought you said Sansa.
Well, no, I basically think that a lot of people are going to die in the next battle, which, by the way, is 55 nights of filming that
oh
they did.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
So it is the longest battle scene in the history of film or TV.
I think the battle will be two episodes. I think we will get a dark ending on 803, and then we will get some hope of light at
803. Guess who's a TV writer?
We
have to do 803. We've got to do. We're in post for 803.
For real. 803 casting into 804.
I'm so but, scared. Like, what if they catch everybody and then they torture people or hang them at the end in 804?
Capture and hang who?
Well, you know, like how. John had to kill the guys who killed him.
Oh, yeah.
What if they had to do something like that?
This is why I think somebody's going to take the throne. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be Danny or Sansa or John, but I think it's probably going to be Danny, actually. And then what's going to happen is that Cersei, who they're casting off as this dark player right now, who's not coming in for this battle. She doesn't want any fucking thing to do with that battle.
She wants her
She's
going
to come in afterwards, and she's going to wipe out or try to wipe out whoever is sitting in that throne. And it's going to be this kind of... Like, this is what the show has always been pressing into our heads, that, like, people, when ambition and power, when they get too much of it, when they eat too much of it, they yes, they end up killing themselves.
Well, the White Walkers, that means the White Walkers can't win this battle, then, because they're not going to go down to Westeros. Like, how are they going to
get... Well, they're going to retreat. They're going to, like, kill enough people, and then they're going to go back, because that's always what they do,
right?
Like, they don't ever really, like, move in.
No, don't they just kill... I think they haven't had the opportunity to kill everyone in Winterfell. Like, that at the Battle of Hardhome... Everyone went into the water, and the White Walkers went to the edge of the water, and that's as far as
they
could go.
Yeah.
This
further.
Is like
yeah.
where they can actually wipe out everyone in the north, and then we're going to have to battle the people in Westeros who are, and the Iron Islands.
I
Wait a minute,
like
hold on.
Two
hold on.
Episodes
maybe they,
after the battle, and like, what are they going to do
maybe,
with those episodes?
Maybe go when they south. Go far enough south, they start melting.
Well, that's the question I have, like, dragon-wise. Oh. Like, so we've seen the dragons
like,
are weaker in the north. Remember, they only ate 18 goats and,
yeah.
like, 12 cows or whatever?
Yeah.
And,
right.
And everyone's like, you know, now they're just hanging out watching Danny Jon Snow porn and, like, unable to really do much.
Like, feeling, yeah.
So,
I mean, I do think we will get climactic dragon battle. Though I have to say, I've read the one published book that was, like, Game of Thrones Silmarillion, like, sort of the before thing. And essentially, anytime someone says... Oh, let's not use the dragons for a reason. They're always fucked. And the whole, like, oh, the dragons have to stay and protect Bran, I think is bullshit.
Aren't Danny and Jon going to go on the dragons? Isn't that what they sort of nod at
I
the
mean,
end?
Like, I would assume so.
I thought they were going
to
go,
Theon
like...
is supposed to protect Bran, right?
Yeah.
Which, obviously, Theon's going to die.
Yes.
Theon is definitely, like, long overdue for a grisly death.
I feel like the actor has not wanted to be there for, like, the last season.
He's been phoning it in.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like Reek was his way of phoning it in, where it was just like...
It's like, I don't have a dick anymore. I'm not into it.
One of the, like, one of the truest rules in Hollywood is no actor wants to play impotent, let alone castrated.
Castrated, yeah.
Except Varys.
Except for Varys.
He was like, he embraced yeah. it, and then he took that wizard
Wait,
and he stuck him in a box and he tortured him right back.
Did anyone have any, like, Facebook group messages that they found interesting about the show?
Well, so a close friend of mine had commented on my tweet about the show that we should talk about how the show is actually very sex worker phobic. And I found that to be a really great comment, especially because, of course, as we've seen, right, sex work plays a very large and substantial role in the show.
Well, that article that I read about the decrease in number of named ladies who actually held things in their own right also reflected the significantly higher number of like prostitutes, female prostitutes,
right,
exclusively, I think. And, you know, in the first couple of seasons, they called it sexposition, the idea that if you had a couple of prostitutes fingering each other, you could talk about, you know.
I think the soldiers are coming through town.
Yeah.
They've killed all the bastards.
Yes.
Ancient. it was a lot of presence for them and a lot of sort of like violence towards sex workers,
yes,
seen
yeah,
as
poor Roz,
lumps of meat.
My
yeah.
favorite sex worker
oh,
of all the
Roz, man.
Roz, well, she was not treated
oh, she
right.
She was beat up and when Tyrion,
Joffrey,
when
fucker.
Cersei, well, remember Cersei thought that she was Shay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, because Varys kind of like let a little slip and sort of set her up and she got beat up.
That was
then,
a devastating
yeah.
And then when she gets
yeah.
killed by Joffrey and, but here's my question though. Sex workers are sort of, yes, what did you, like sex workaholic,
well, so my,
phobic?
My friend had, like, she had made this, I think, really astute comment that the sex workers on the show are amongst the most show's most interesting characters.
Yeah.
And yet we hear comments like Cersei's comment in the first episode of the current season.
Do you want me to
right?
say it?
Yes, please say it.
Okay. You want a whore? Buy her. You want a queen? Earn her.
But then, of course, that's immediate.
Wait, and I just have to say, Laura Craft motto.
and that's immediately followed, though, obviously, by Cersei. You know, she says that, right? I believe she says that to Euron. And mm-hmm, then, mm-hmm.
And then
she
anyway.
Gives him that look, and she's like, but, you know, I really want to get laid right now.
Well,
and
I mean,
here's my question, though.
In a narrative that really loved fucking with how narrative traditionally works, Shay was one of the hackest stories of, you know, one we've seen before. Oh, he fell in love with his prostitute, but at the end of the day, she just ended up turning on him and having sex with his dad. We've seen that a thousand times before.
I think the interesting thing about the sex workers, which when I first started watching Game of Thrones, they annoyed me. I was like, why are we always like seeing naked ladies for sex position or whatever? Then I started seeing that they sort of show that in this medieval-esque world, women, all women, Cersei having to marry Robert Baratheon and having to have sex with him, even though she doesn't, people, women being used as pawns. What's the woman, the Tyrell who?
Marjorie.
Marjorie was all about that.
All about that, like having to have sex with Tommen by first talking about his stupid cat. Like, you know.
Sir Pounce, do not disrespect me.
Sir Pounce, but like, you know, Dany,
right.
Sansa, every single woman.
Dany was
right.
sold.
No,
you know?
I agree
has been,
the
I think it shows that all women in this world, like, yes, they will have power, but a lot of the power they gain is through sex manipulation, maneuvering,
yes. But
and we are all
the Shay storyline is old, it's true, but it also gave a new ripple to it, which is that that was what she had to do to survive, and everyone's doing what
yes.
they have to do to
we
survive.
We are all sex workers
but
in
you,
this world.
But you never yeah. get the equivalent of like a Lord Varys.
I mean,
you never see a person who is taking this manipulation and putting power over it, and there was an extent to which...
Well, it's almost like what Sansa is.
I mean,
there was the guy who had sex with... what's his name? Marcella... what's the... the Martell's brother who has to have...
You're talking about Renly Baratheon and Loras. Yeah.
No, but Loras, when he gets called out by the High Scepter...
Septon, yeah.
Septon. And there's like the guy who's like the male prostitute who like turns him in. The blonde male prostitute. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. I don't.
But I think that, you know, like, yes, we are all sex workers and, I mean... I guess, in the sense that, yes, it is, you know, like, that even women who don't get paid to do sex work are still doing sex work. But I think therein actually lies the important distinction, which
yeah.
is that actually, if you really think about it, it's like the forms of female empowerment or whatever that we see on the show are contingent upon people like Sansa passing through the crucible of rape, marital rape.
Yeah.
Right. And there are so many situations of marital rape on the show, which in fact demonstrate, you know, the extent to which, like, I mean, all these issues of intimate partner violence that I think have become amplified during the show's run with Me Too. But the sex workers on the show are actually, in some sense, I mean, in some sense, like, they are working women who are actually, like, earning. I mean, it's not that they're not treated terribly and assaulted and raped as well, but there is a kind of, like these are actually different positions. These are actually women who are making a living through these forms of, like, being with and even possibly manipulation. And I think that, you know, we see this in the first episode. We see sex workers reappear with Bronn. There's a kind of uncharacteristic scene for the most recent seasons where there is, I guess, what you have been referring to, Laura, as sex position. There, you know, Bronn is kind of like fucking these or getting fucked by these
Eddie,
three women.
Eddie had his eyes burned off.
Right, exactly.
But,
yeah.
Like, but Roz, like, was in the first seasons sort of like one of the big contributions of Benioff and Weiss.
Any of the first seasons.
Yeah, but like it was a big change from the books.
Well, she's like a combination of several prostitutes that appear.
Yeah,
right,
but I mean, they didn't have personhood. Yeah, and the thing is that Roz, giving that sort of like a thread and a narrative, taking us from the north down to the south, did give it at least perspective. And so frequently the prostitutes... Let me finish.
Sorry.
So frequently the prostitutes just end up being these lumps of meat who end up getting shoved away and used for our purposes and not given a story. And I think that they became shyer about the idea of Roz when more criticism of sort of the sexual politics of the show happened. And they answered it by killing her instead of giving her agency in some way.
Does she die in the books?
She's not a character in the books. Oh, in the books,
she's a
bunch of prostitutes who get used and then forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's interesting, just real quick, like Lena Headey, the actress that plays Cersei, she actually didn't like that scene, apparently, where she agrees to be with Euron, even after stating her whole thing of, like, you know, you have to earn a queen. And she really asked them, she, like, was like, rewrite this, because I don't feel like my character would just, like, hop into the sack with him.
Yeah.
And they did tweak it around, and she eventually agreed. But I feel like,
Lena Headey...
Huh? Like, yeah, no, she is
no,
now.
No, early Cersei would have been like, I guess that's what I have to do.
Yeah.
Current Cersei with the black leather outfit and the... You know what I think is interesting, though, is like every relationship on Game of Thrones, when we have true romantic love, like with Robb Stark, it all ends in... It all ends in disaster. Mm-hmm. People suffer for it. And in fact, either this episode or the one prior to this, that's the conversation between Dannis and Sansa, where Sansa says, it's not good. It doesn't bode well when people fall in love.
Yeah.
If you love Dany, we're screwed. Because when people do fall in love, they do foolish things. Mm-hmm. That's why Robb Stark died. That's maybe even why Caitlin
and
Ned.
There's
been a lot of like love
there's so many. All the love stories are tragic.
Well, off of the Caitlin thing, like Sam getting pissed off about his dad and his brother, you just immediately had that smell of season four of like, oh, somebody's going to do something fucking stupid because they're pissed off right now.
Right, but it's Sam, so maybe not.
Yeah.
And even like Robert Baratheon's love of Lyanna Stark. You know, when they go to the crypts, he can't even remember what she looks like in the first episode.
Yeah.
Where Ned's like, he's like, I don't even remember what she looked like. It's the idea of pure love, the sort of knightly, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight kind of ideal of pure knighthood love. And that, therein lies danger. And it doesn't seem like there's anything in between, except for maybe Gendry and Arya, which is like, you know, friendship. Based on flirtation to something.
But it's
also
divorced from it's divorced from her class, which is interesting.
But you know what else is really compelling to me, which, you know, you mentioned the knighting scene, of course, which for me was my favorite moment of the last episode.
Yeah.
And to me, that romance is really, really interesting.
That's like a bromance.
And, you know, while I'm very upset that Brienne doesn't get to be gay once again, because I also feel like there are interesting like vibes between her and Sansa. I had a very long conversation, or I've sort of been having an unfolding conversation with some of the dykes that I watch Game of Thrones with about service butchdom and how like Brienne, like her role is essentially that of a service butch.
She doesn't seem gay to me.
I know that we're running long, but I did like Benioff and Weiss taking over has laid a heteronormativity over the show, like Grey Worm and Miss Andé.
A quiet snow of heteronormativity, muffling the sounds of everything.
The white crow has flown in.
Like, specifically with Grey Worm and Miss Andé and Theon and Sansa, where it was like, you can't understand these people outside of their perceived gender and shoving them together with another person like that. And it was a little bit sad that you're taking both Arya and Brienne and sort of like shoving that, like, and yes, there is butch heterosexuality, but there is also butch female homosexuality.
Yes,
but there's also butch heteros, you know
yes,
what I mean?
I said like, that though.
Oh, I didn't hear you say
no,
it.
No, I said that, but also it's like,
I mean, and I'm kind of really into the thing between her and Jamie because I also sort of like Jamie in a weird way.
Also, I love a professional respect romance. Yeah. Like, there's nothing I love better.
They also, like, love each other. I think they like each other sexually.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Did you watch the commentary with Benioff and Weiss? Because, of course, they were like, she's really in love with him.
Yes. Oh, my
he
God.
He doesn't
the
really.
The commentary was...
I feel like it's mutual.
The commentary was, for me, an,
so frustrating.
An absolute reversal of what I saw unfolding on screen.
In what way?
Which is that he is really enamored of her. She is uncomfortable
with
that.
I mean, he fucking knights her.
Yeah,
she's not used to people liking her.
Sir Brienne. Like, and he is, you know, like, could I please serve under your command? And Benioff and Weiss are all, she has this unrequited love for Jamie. And I'm like,
He loves her.
They're like reflexively creating something that they're too dumb to understand, like how it functions.
All right, you guys, we want to hear your thoughts, your opinions, who you think is going to die. Please come to the Facebook group and keep us honest. All right, when we come back, we got jams.
Hello, this is Amy Mann.
And I'm Ted Leo.
And we have a podcast called The Art of Process.
We've been lucky enough over the past year to talk to some of our friends and acquaintances from across the creative spectrum to find out how they actually work.
And so I have to write material that makes sense and makes people laugh. I also have to think about what I'm saying to people.
If I kick your ass, I'll make you famous.
The fight to get LGBTQ representation in the show.
We weirdly don't know as many musicians as you would expect.
I really just became a political speechwriter by accident
of realizing that I have accidentally pulled my pants down.
Listen and subscribe at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcast.
It's like if the guinea pig was complicit in helping the scientist.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are
Margaret Wappler,
Laura Kraft.
Of Tongson. Of Tongson.
Every week.
We used to say of Karen.
Of Karen.
Every week on the show, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? So I turn to you, Laura Kraft, and I ask, what's your current jam?
Okay, my current jam is Game of Thrones inspired. And I'm really into, and I'm getting my haircut tomorrow, and I'm actually thinking about getting my haircut like this. I want to get an early Bran haircut.
Uh-huh. No, you are not.
I want to get Bran flying out of the window hair.
No.
Yes. I do.
It's so cute.
You've had the same haircut the entire, like, 10 years I've known you or whatever. You're not getting that haircut.
I've had so many different kinds of haircuts. I've had crew cuts, Margaret Wappler. You don't know me. I've had black hair. I've had red hair. I've had it all.
Okay, I've seen pictures, but no.
But I was inspired by him and his hilariously greasy bowl cut now. And so, but his early haircut looks like Ian Brown from Stone Roses. So my jam that was inspired by that is this jam.
Margaret, what is your current jam?
My current jam is FKA Twigs Cellophane. She created this video with the Bjork collaborator Andrew Thomas Wang, and it really does have super Bjork vibes, but it also has Kate Bush's Woman's Work vibes.
Oh,
on that.
I love that song.
So fuck. I mean, that song is amazing. There's all kinds of build to the song that's so gorgeous. Like, it starts with this like quiet voice, and then there's some piano, and then it keeps like layering it on, and her voice keeps going higher and higher and higher. And it's just really majestic as a performance. So this is Cellophane.
They wanna see us, wanna see us.
Lovely. Kessler, what about you?
Well, the song that I've chosen is an oldie and not a goodie. It's Rusted Roots, Send Me On My Way, originally composed in 1992. and it was, it has, this song has become something of a joke between my best friend, Jessie. She lives in Berlin. She's a childhood friend. And myself, and I can't really remember how it started, but I think it might have had to do with me telling her that her ex-husband looked like he was in Rusted Root. It was not a compliment. So, you know, it's kind of like a dated song, this song, but it's in all of these Enterprise rent-a-car commercials. And, you know, it's extremely popular. Like, it's been repurposed in all of these different ways, despite its liberal use of the flute and its kind of offensive fake African nonsense words. I feel like it's like the essence of what I would consider to be like cokehead hippie music.
Uh-huh.
You know, like a cokehead hippie is like a very specific thing. But
no, I've been to the 80s.
Sadly, you know, sadly, I listen to this song all the time because I've been flying pretty frequently, and it, like, for some reason, I think because it reminds me of my best friend, I like listen to it like 10 times every time I'm on an airplane. And yeah, even if it reminds me of her ex-husband. So this is Rusted Roots, Send Me On My Way.
Shot my hand, only say, only tell you to run. On the way, on the way, and nobody say, nobody on.
This week, my jam is Better in Color by Lizzo, because Lizzo put out an album. Let's listen to it.
Love Lizzo so much. Yeah.
Let's listen. It's pretty wonderful. It's pretty wonderful. All right. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Brandon, with Margaret Wappler and our two very special guests, Sarah Off-Karen Kessler. Sarah, where can people learn more about you?
I tweet at MovableJaw.
And she provides me with the opportunity of saying I'm friends with one of the world's foremost experts on ventriloquism.
Yeah.
Which is magical. And Laura Kraft, where can people learn more about you?
You gotta come knock at my door. I'm usually home.
I mean, like, just show up to parties that friends of mine are having, because the number of friends of mine that Laura is also friends with is significant. You showed up to
a TV writer cabal over here.
Quiz bowl friend.
Oh, quiz bowl.
Friend, yes. Is an architect and the wife is an event planner.
Yes, and Laura Kraft was there. It was like, hello. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Musio. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. This week, we would like to thank K. Sierra Sierra. That's a good name. That's going to be in competition
solid
this year.
Work. Thank you.
Day one listener here. I don't know why I've held out on y'all for so long with this. My bad. But your voices spark joy. You always deliver on serving pop culture takes that I feel in my soul or takes I didn't even know I needed with spunk, humor, frankness, and intelligence. Deeply is now deeply embedded in my daily vocabulary. Oh, because I say deeply a lot. Okay. so thanks for that, too. Have any feedback for us on tonight's show? Want to suggest a future topic or ask a panelist for advice? You can call 530-237-4108.
I want somebody to call with like a big marital problem.
I know.
I feel like I have some expertise in marriage. Like, please.
There was that couple who invited all of us to their wedding and none of us went, and I blame all of us. If leaving a voicemail message is scary, go ahead and record a voice memo on your phone and email us the audio at poprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and get in the discussion. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our senior producer is Laura Swisher.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.